गोविंद हमारी पुरुषों
ओम तमाम बचामी। Lord Chaitanya, 500 years ago, went to South India and came to this temple known as the Adikeshav Temple. And in this temple, great saintly personalities were discussing from a scripture that was not commonly known. It was a chapter of a prayer by Brahma. In the Vedic literature, Brahma is actually the creator, the engineer of the universe. It said that in the beginning, many universes appeared from the body of Mahavishnu. And when these universes are all there, clustering and floating in the causal ocean, then Mahavishnu expands himself. And as Garbhadaksaya Vishnu enters into each universe, then from his navel comes a lotus flower. And on that lotus flower, Brahma appears. Now that's different than 6 days creation and rest on the seventh day, isn't it? It's just another creation history found in Vedic literature. And then it says the first living being in the universe is Brahma. And he finds himself on a lotus flower. Big, large lotus flower. And all by himself, alone in the universe. So he is wondering, where am I coming from? What is the origin of my existence? And he's searching, he thinks, I'm on this lotus flower. Maybe if I go down the stem of this lotus flower to the root, maybe I will see where the lotus flower comes from, and then I will know. But when he comes down to the bottom of that stem, what he finds is an ocean of water. This ocean of water is actually a drop in the navel of Vishnu. But it looks to him like an ocean. Then, on his own power, he cannot find the source of his existence, although he tries. And Brahma, by the way, has four heads, as if it wasn't extraordinary enough. Four heads, yes, four. One, two, three, four. Four heads. And he can think with four heads at the same time, yeah, believe it or not. Yeah, it is true. Yeah. Four heads, yeah. Four. And then he can think independently with his four heads. Oh yes, he can. So it's four heads is better than one. You know, you thought about that? Anyway, so yes. And so Brahma, although with great intelligence he searched for the source of his existence, he couldn't find it. Then he heard somewhere in the ether, sound echoed into the ether, and the echo was ta, ta, pa, ta, pa, ta, pa. In Sanskrit, ta pa means austerity, perform austerity. So that sound came to him, and then Brahma performed austerity for a great length of time. And in due course of time, from within his heart, everything was revealed. And transcendental knowledge of eternity, manifested in his consciousness. And then, the Vedic literatures came from his mouth. In that way, Brahma was realizing the truth. Then that truth expanded further. Brahma then from his mind manifested different sages. And these sages populated the higher regions in the universe. But In that way, the universe was not so populated so fast. It said then, he created the first man and woman. And after that, populating the universe went very well. It filled up quickly. And you know, in some parts of the universe, there is overpopulation. What can we say? Brisbane's not too bad yet. Although, in this particular little, whatever it is, long cafe, it is a bit overpopulated. Busy corner of the universe. Anyway, in this way, gradually we see that according to the Vedic literature, life comes from higher regions in the universe. Sometimes you read something from someone like von Däniken, who writes that life comes from the extraterrestrials. And there you go. He's got it right? Yeah, he figured it out, but not with UFOs, right? Just coming down. No, rather with celestial beings, with beings of a superior nature, of a higher than human nature. Not so gross. See, there's this one idea that we should be able to see all beings in the universe. But why? There are many beings in the universe who cannot be seen by us because they're of a more subtle nature. You know, even here, there may be some beings that we cannot see, especially at midnight. What's that? What's that? The wind. But there was no wind. There is now. At midnight. So in this way, there may be, as Shakespeare quotes, there may be more between heaven and earth than you know, Horatio. So Vedic literature is speaking about that, exactly about that, about higher regions in the universe with superior beings, being superior to human beings. Some are very powerful. And therefore, yeah, what happened? What happened, I will tell you by an example. Imagine that there are ants. Yes. Oh, yes. What is the favorite thing? What do ants like the most? You reckon? What do ants like the most? Tell me. You can do it. Yes. What do they like the most? Come on. Tell me. Say it.
Yeah.
Oh, I know you know. Sugar, yay! Sugar. Then, so, human beings are so powerful, they can make it rain sugar from the sky. So from an ant's perspective, this is a miracle. It's raining sugar! And if we do it often enough, we become the sugar god or goddess, right? You can imagine, you know, because from the ant perspective, this is a miracle. How is it possible that they make it rain sugar? For human beings, very easy. Kids can do it. They love to do it, actually. They do it all the time. Yeah? Turn up the sugar pot upside down. It's lots of fun. I used to do it myself. So, from the ant's perspective, our actions are supernatural. In the same way, living beings who are higher in the universe, great powerful personalities, are supernatural to our perspective. And thus, in ancient times, they would call such beings gods. And they referred to the rain god. In India, they called him Indra. In Greece, they called him Zeus, right? In Germany, they called him Donar. In Norway, they called him Thor. In South America, they also called him something, but I cannot pronounce it. Quetzal, or too many Q's and X's, but whatever it was. They have all these names for the same personality. Right? All the names. Thunderbolt and everything. So, but these are not, this is not God. No. These are powerful living beings in the universe. But they also, like us, go through birth, death, old age, and disease, says the Bhagavad Gita. So, in that sense, what's the difference? A little better quality of life than human life, but still not perfect. On the heavenly planets, you can have bodies that never perspire, and that always smell sweet. All right, that's nice. No need for sprays or whatever. Always smelling sweet. One can have bodies that stay young until the very end. So that's also good. You know, I personally wouldn't mind that. I like that idea. Just staying young until the end. But then what about the end, right? Then there's the end. The lion comes on the screen, you know. All the names of the actors begin to play on the screen, and it's like, oh, it's the end. Oh no, it's the end. So, therefore, in the whole universe, life is temporary. Even Brahma, with the four heads, he lives the longest of all, but even he has to die in the end. So then, say, no, no, there must be something else. Death is unnatural. It is unnatural. Yes, because na jayate mriyate vakadachin, the soul never takes birth. The soul never dies. So it says in the Bhagavad Gita. And thus, we appreciate, yes, nobody wants to die because we don't die. We are eternal. So that is, then comes spiritual mind. When we realize we are eternal, and then we realize that, then we can go outside the universe where there's eternal existence in the spiritual domain. There we can go, and there we can reside with the Supreme Lord. So, well, okay, interesting, this Vedic literature sounds pretty similar to all other scriptures, religious scriptures, sort of all the same, you know. You behave good and so on, and then at the end of your life you go to heaven, and there life is eternal. Yeah, and then you enjoy forever, isn't it? And if you go in like the Islam, then you know, you can go to heaven and you get 14 maidens. No, 17, sorry, missed three. 17 maidens. Or you can go in the Germanic heaven, and there it was beer forever. So, you know, all the good things of life, right, are found there in eternity. Is it like that? No, it says it's not like that entirely. Rather, what is going on, I saw a cartoon of two angels, and they had the halos, and one grabbed the halo of another and started and took a bite of it, you know, for variety's sake. You know. It gets boring up there. Yeah? Always playing trumpets and flying around and so on, or a little harp. No, is it like that? It says, no. Krishna is also there. He is the center of everything, the center of everyone's mind. Said, so spiritual consciousness doesn't just mean connecting with energies. You feel the chi. Oh yes, I feel the chi. You're catching the prana. Yes, I'm catching the prana. You know, are you like one with the universe? The universe. Yes, the universe. Oh, universe. That's not all. That's just energy. But there is also a source of energy. Just like the source of the sugar is the child. There's always a source of energy. So it is that source of energy that rules the spiritual domain. Not by law or by force, but by generating love in everyone. Because the material world is dominated by lust. This is the world which is dominated by lust. That's what this world is all about. You know, lust, somehow or other. In so many varieties and forms. But the spiritual domain is dominated by love. So lust is self-centered. Lust is ultimately what's in it for me. Yeah. Whereas love is giving. Love is aiming to please others. So that is spiritual consciousness, pleasing others. That is the spiritual world. This mantra chanting, it comes directly from the spiritual world. And when we go there, in this chanting, it lifts us up. At first a little, and then more, and gradually, fully, to the spiritual platform, where we begin to understand that giving is the essence of existence. Then we will be satisfied. And then we realize that service to the Supreme Lord is really what it's all about. That is the perfection of life. Ancient sages in ancient times knew this. Ancient sages on higher planetary systems were aware of this knowledge. Ancient sages who existed at the beginning of the universe, they knew. And somewhere on the way, that knowledge was lost. And here we are, and thinking this is all there is. Brizzy. Keeping busy and brizzy. Yeah? But I tell you, there is more. There is more to life than brizzy alone. Oh yes, there is. So today I took you all over the universe. I hope it was alright. Not too many stars and galaxies out there. But I took you beyond the universe, to the spiritual world, which is where we belong. So this is food for thought. And one can read about this in scriptures such as Bhagavad Gita. I'm only giving a little preview today. Preview. To be continued. So, thank you so much for being with us today. Does anyone have a question? Maybe then I'll try and answer it. Otherwise. Yes?
Why is the Maha Mantra, like there's so many mantras in the Vedic pantheon, why is it the most powerful book?
Okay, very good question. So, mantras, right, are all invested with power. And previously, there were sages. By chanting of mantra, they could do many things. Some people were fighting with mantras. You know, now we fight, we think we're very sophisticated, we got missiles. But in those days, you just chant a mantra and just release a great power. So mantras are known to have all kinds of powers. Some were lighting fire by mantra. So just some examples of mantras. But the Maha Mantra is the great mantra because it has the ultimate purpose. Krishna means, which is one name in the Maha Mantra, it means the all-attractive. So there are many things that are attractive. I mean, I can think of many attractive things. I'm sure you also can. We can go window shopping and stuff, you know, look at all the things which are good. Goodies, goodies. But, you know, there is more than that alone. It's nothing is all attractive. What is all attractive? There's people who are attractive, but did you ever meet somebody who's all attractive? There are some sides. There's the other side of the coin, if you know what I mean. So Krishna means all attractive. So that's interesting. So it's focusing on the all attractive. Hare means service to the all attractive. And Ram means happiness, the result of serving the all attractive. So the mantra is in this way focusing us on the ultimate goal of life. Instead of wasting our time with things that are partially attractive, we should focus on the all-attractive. And by serving that, we, not by being on the take, but by giving in service, we approach the all-attractive with love. The result will be happiness. That's the meaning of the Maha Mantra. And that's why it's the greatest mantra. It gives you the greatest result, the all-attractive. What more do you want? Okay.
that, isn't it?
We do a little more kirtan. We could. He says we could do a little more kirtan. You think we could?
Yes.
Okay. All right.